Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Weird Al Yankovic, and you're listening to the Pantheon Network.
Hey, I'm Nick DiMatteo, and welcome to Season 6, Episode 19 of Music is Not a Genre, MXG. Sometimes I forget to do those hand gestures, and I know there's a huge outcry from the masses when I don't do them, so I make sure to do them every time, especially for you audio people who can, you know, imagine my hand moving like that. Thank you, as always, for watching and listening. Of course, if you are watching, hello, you can see me. The audio streams everywhere. You know, all the usual suspects there. And if you are just listening, please go to youtube.com/@musicisnotagenre. You get a video for every single episode, except for the bonus M extra videos, which are only on patreon.com/musicisnotagenre. That's it for that. Let's get to it. This is kind of a very special episode, and you'll see why. What's an album and why? Part 4.1. Indie versus pop in the 1980s. So a few things there. Yes, this is part 4 of my albums series. But you heard me say part 4.1. Now I'm adjusting my microphone here. So if you hear stuff, that's your problem. And that's because for the very first time in the history of Music is Not a Genre, it's an MXG special, I am dividing an episode into two. As much as I love to ramble on, there are certain topics that I'm finding require more than an hour 15, whatever it is. And this is one of them. Now, for those of you who've been following this album series, I like to do a quick review. I started with the history of album development through the 1950s. Then I did an episode on the 60s. Then I did an episode on the 70s. So you may ask why I am dividing the episode on the 80s into two parts and not the others. Well, that is a bias. It's just a simple bias. The fact that that's part of the era I grew up in, and I happen to know a lot about the 80s and a lot more about the 80s in terms of certain observations and facts than I do other decades previously. I don't know what's going to happen in the 90s. No one does. Except for people, never mind. So that means that this really is going to serve everyone better if I divide it into two. I don't know where the division's going to happen, though, because I don't know how long this is going to be. So again, pretty exciting for those of you who care about that stuff. And let's get right into it. You know, first of all, why the subtitle? Other than 4.1, the subtitle is Indie versus Pop in the 1980s. Why? Because there was a real tug of war in the 80s between indie and pop. That was, to me, I believe it was set up by the triple revolution of the late 70s of punk, electronic, and hip hop, all of which would come into huge play in the 80s and decades beyond that. Now that means that for the first time, and I will say this over and over again, independent music has been around since, honestly, before even labels, you know, record labels. That's kind of the definition of what most music was prior to that, other than music that was sponsored by, you know, royalty and et cetera, other patrons. But most music in history is independent music. But in terms of the industry, to really say indie music, as much as there was some of that in the 60s and some of that in the 70s, the indie scene really was popping up in the late 70s with punk, like I said, punk, electronic, hip hop for various reasons, and then blew up in the 80s and has been with us ever since in various forms. So I wanted to illustrate very clearly for this 80s episode that this is a huge part of this decade for really the first time in history. And that division and that kind of tug of war, indie influencing pop and pop influencing indie, and which one was going to have the greater, you know, sales and popularity and critical acclaim and all of that stuff was just swirling around everyone's heads in the 1980s who was into music, you know, to any large degree. And so that's what that subtitle is for. You know, I have some notes here. It'd say indie would do its best to get the kind of money and fame that pop had, and pop would do its best to get the kind of artistry and credibility that indie had. And those things would flip flop. So this 4.1 is called Indie versus Pop in the 1980s. Keep that in mind before we get to 4.2, which will be, you know, in less than an hour. Promises. As usual for this episode, every episode of Albums, I'll do a year-by-year breakdown featuring top albums, debut albums, and other notable albums, and other things about each year that were significant. And like I said, two parts. I believe this will go up to 84 or 85. I don't know yet. I'm going year by year, but I've got a timer here. You want to see my timer? For those of you just listening, I'm showing my phone timer. That was exciting. Go ahead and screenshot that and share it with everybody. Each part will have, of the part one and part two, 4.1 and 4.2, each one will have some conclusions, will have a featured song, and will have a bonus episode attached to it. This first half of the 80s albums episode, the bonus M extra video only on patreon.com/musicisnotajam is one of the all-time favorites that I have ever done, or honestly will do. I haven't recorded it yet. And it is the history of cassettes. The history of cassettes. I am excited about that. So please join me at patreon.com/musicisnotajam to check it out. And you'll find out what next week's M extra bonus video is for part two of the 80s when I get there. So some citations and disclaimers. As usual, I'm using sources like Wikipedia, Rolling Stone, udiscovermusic.com. That U is just the letter U, but it's all one word. Digitaldreamdoor.com is something I recently discovered I really like. As usual, I'm going to miss a ton. Anybody who, honestly, even someone who attempts to name every single album that was released in a given year is going to miss some, because there are just some that are not on the radar and never have been. As I said, I'm kind of biased toward this decade, so I'm going to gush about some albums and artists that you may not be at the top of your list. I may miss some artists that are at the top of your list, and I may not miss them, but I may not gush about them, let's just say. And I will include some artists that others might not. I'm going to do my best to include a lot of underground music, of course, not just best-selling or popular music. That's kind of the point of this whole indie versus pop, and try not to include too many albums that just happen to be personal favorites, but I'm going to include some, honestly, because it's kind of important to me. I won't spend any time on MTV for two reasons. One, that's about singles, not albums. And this is an albums series. But second, I plan to do an entire episode on the history of music videos, and we'll talk a lot about MTV when I get there. I don't know when that's coming, but it's going to be sometime in season six. So sometime before September of 2024, an entire episode on the history of music videos. Not going to happen here. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about singles in general, because again, this is about albums. So let's get into it.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Year by year, starting with, surprise, surprise, drum roll please, 1980. Whoa, that was a shocker. As usual, with the beginning of any decade, there's a lot of holdover from the previous decade, but I gotta say this, and honestly, I almost tried to find a way to make this the subtitle. It is striking, striking how quickly the 80s became the 80s. It became defined by the sound and style, you know, in contrast to the 1970s, I would say, and you can quote me on this, more than any other decade changeover in the history of music. Still, before and after, the only possible exception would be when the 80s morphed into the 90s, but no, I think that is a close second, but honestly, not even that close of a second, because I remember that hangover as well. And that took a couple of years. But the 80s, the 70s to the 80s, you know, of course it wasn't instantaneous, but in a lot of ways it really felt like it. So the holdovers, they're there. But in terms of what was going on in the year, it was already the 80s. In some ways, because you know how much I like production from 78 to 82, I feel like the 80s started earlier, you know. In some ways, obviously. There were lots of greatest hits compilations in the top albums, as if we were collectively reminiscing about and saying goodbye to the 1970s. Anyone who lived through that, was old enough to remember, will recall that the 70s were talked about as being a super tumultuous decade. It's because it's true. Is every decade tumultuous? Yes. But there's a certain way that a decade is tumultuous that we have this kind of collective agreement that we say, what the hell just happened? And we knew that when the 80s hit, there were changes that were happening in culture, in politics, in technology that were going to change the decade to come, that the decade would be quite different. And like I said, it was pretty much from the beginning. So some top albums starting there. Donna Summer's Greatest Hits, Bee Gees' Greatest Hits, Kenny Rogers' Greatest Hits. Right off the bat, that's an awesomely diverse set of greatest hits, those three albums. Quite different from each other. Different emphases on the things that were going on in the 70s. Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band's Against the Wind was their only number one album. Happened in 1980. Billy Joel's Glass Houses, number one in 1980. Side one of Glass Houses is one of my all-time favorite album sides of any album of any artist ever. Just is. Rolling Stones' Emotional Rescue. I mean, you know, like or feel, you know, tepid about the Rolling Stones, one thing you have to say is from the mid-1960s through almost the mid-1980s, not quite, they dominated. They pretty much every album they had a hit single off of, is everything. And it's important to remember that, just in the sense that if you think Rolling Stones, I mean, you can think 2023, their new album came out. Most people think the 60s or 70s, but they were pretty damn dominant in the early 80s as well. Jackson Browne's only number one album, Hold Out. He actually had bigger hits before that in the 70s and would have even bigger hits after that. Things like Somebody's Baby, Lawyers in Love, and stuff like that after 1980. Queen's The Game. Queen kept having hit albums, but The Game was the first of their albums to use a synth. 1980s, anyone? Crazy Little Thing Called Love, Another One Bites the Dust. Those were some of the great ones from that album. Another One Bites the Dust was ever present in school dances for me. That was sort of their disco move. Barbra Streisand's Guilty, which was, I think, almost all or all written by Barry Gibb. And that was that thing when I talked about the Bee Gees, how they were dominant in the 80s in a different way in the United States. They went sort of behind the scenes. And this is one example of that. Springsteen, The River. Honestly, great album, right? barely a shade of what was going to come for Springsteen in this decade, and yet Hungry Heart was on this, which is a classic. And then, of course, Double Fantasy, Lennon. You know, would it have hit number one if he hadn't died? Yeah, absolutely would have, because it was like a 5-year break between albums for him, so it would have happened anyway. But, of course, it dominated in a different way because of his death right at the end of this year. But the top album of the entire year, Pink Floyd's The Wall, which, like Another One Bites the Dust, Another Brick in the Wall was huge at the school dances. You wouldn't think so, but the mix of music, well, it wasn't just dance music. So some debut albums in 1980, lots and lots of post-punk and new wave. Buggles, Age of Plastic, that there's the other ones who did Video Killed the Radio Star. The Vapors, who did Turning Japanese. Go ahead and look that up. Joan Jett's debut album, Blizzard of Oz, Ozzy Osbourne's solo debut album, U2's Boy debut album, INXS debut album, Bryan Adams and Loverboy and DOA, all Canadian artists debut albums, The Feelies, not very popular, famous, but seminal for college jangle rock that would come in the mid-80s and beyond. Dead Kennedys and Circle Jerks, huge for 1980s punk, including debuts from X, The Plasmatics, The Cramps, a lot of punk. Huey Lewis and the News, first album in 1980. English Beat, second wave ska, UB40, reggae, both debut albums. Bauhaus, first wave of goth, debut album. Berlin, Iron Maiden and Def Leppard, opposite sides of where metal was headed, debut albums in 1980. Killing Joke, Curtis Blow, The Breaks, debut album, one of the first albums from a hip-hop artist, but the first, Sugar Hill Gang. That was the first album that came out this year, 1980. LaToya Jackson had a debut album this year. OMD and Psychedelic Furs and Echo and the Bunnymen, British, you know, electro rock kind of things. Pretenders and the Romantics. What I Like About You was on this album. Dexys Midnight Runners, first album in 1980. SOS Band, one of the best funk bands in the 1980s. Of course, started in the 70s, but they were just... think of the song Take Your Time, Do It Right, and so many others from SOS. Billy Squire had his first album in 1980. Some other notable albums in 1980. Hall & Oates, Voices, Kiss on My List, You Make My Dreams, some big hits there. It was the beginning of their comeback, if you could call it. I don't know what to call it. They started out as kind of folk artists. Then they went to kind of like 70s funk, and they had like... they had Sarah Smile and you can, I forget the name of the song. It's a bitch girl. You can rely on the old man's money, right? Since You're Gone, I think. So 70s hits. And then they kind of went, you know, didn't have a few any in the late 70s, really. And then in the 80s, they started this comeback with Your Kisses on My List, You Make My Dreams, but they would get even bigger after that. Of course, Kool & the Gang's album this year had the song Celebrate. So it's the start of their, you know, I wouldn't say dominance, but real popularity. Xanadu soundtrack featuring ELO and Olivia Newton-John. Genesis Duke, which was the start of their reinvention after Peter Gabriel left and they went through some transitional things. Zenyatta Mondatta from The Police. I almost put that up in the diorama in the back, but I couldn't fit everything. Peter Gabriel 3, which includes Games Without Frontiers. And it includes the almost very first gated snare drum on that album, which was played by his former bandmate, Phil Collins. Dolly Parton, 9 to 5 and Odd Jobs. Pete Townsend's Let My Love Open the Door. The Gap Band, more great 1980s funk. Diana Ross, that album included Upside Down and I'm Coming Out. Come on, dance with me. Squeeze, Pulling Muscles from a Shell. Pat Benatar, Hit Me With Your Best Shot. Was on there. Jay Giles, the album Love Stinks. They'd get even bigger pretty soon after that. The Cure, 17 Seconds. Really kind of the first, like what was defining what goth is and was and would be. As well as one from goth pioneer Susie and the Banshees. And the last from Joy Division. Public Image Limited, PIL's second album. B-52's album. 1980 included Rock Lobster, Van Halen, Women and Children First, Rush going new wave for the first time. One of Smokey's greatest albums, Warm Thoughts. Devo, the album had Whip It. McCartney 2, now considered a classic. Bowie's Scary Monsters, which was the beginning of his next reinvention. You tell me which number that was. Stevie Wonder coming back after The Secret Life of Plants, Journey Through the Secret Life of Plants. Judas Priest, Breaking the Law, Living After Midnight, huge album for them. And Motorhead, Ace of Spades, AC/DC, Back in Black. Prince released Dirty Mind, which was a huge leap forward from his previous albums. Talking Heads album included Once in a Lifetime, freaking The Clash's London Calling, Train in Vain, and so many others. Which brings us to 1981. Again, striking in this year how the 80s are already so the 80s. And yes, there were legacy bands in this year like the Stones and the Moody Blues and other bands and bands that started in the 70s but had bigger success in the 80s like Foreigner and Styx and REO Speedwagon and Journey, AC/DC. But that just further shows how deep into the new decade we already are by the second year. Overall, very 80s, yeah, but not quite as 80s as the 80s would get. It's a very easy listening year, 1981, that saw a small number of artists have epic albums with multiple hit singles. And also a big point, interesting, it's overwhelmingly white. That would change. Top albums of the year, Double Fantasy, hung on from the previous year. REO Speedwagon's High Infidelity, Keep On Loving You, Take It On The Run, we're on there. The absolute top album of the year. Any guesses? Drum roll. Styx's Paradise Theater. These Are the Best of Times. Too Much Time On My Hands was on there. Kim Carnes had a number one album. The song Betty Davis Eyes was on there. Moody Blues, the song The Voice. Nice song. Beginning of their kind of slow comeback. They would have some hits in the 80s. Pat Benatar was number one. Foreigner 4. Urgent, Waiting for a Girl Like You, Jukebox Hero. Stevie Nicks' debut solo was number one, had Stop Dragging My Heart Around Leather and Lace, Edge of 17. Journey's Escape, Who's Crying Now, Don't Stop Believing, Open Arms. Tattoo You, The Stones, again had a number one album with Start Me Up and Waiting on a Friend. I have a note here about Keith Richards. I'm going to go ahead and leave that. I'd love to know your opinion of the man's musical tastes. AC/DC had a number one album. Some debut albums. So not very many number one albums, but keep in mind that though that was a few number one albums, there would be even fewer to come in a different year. Lots of punk and post-punk and new wave debut bands, especially by bands that didn't go anywhere, like the Adolescents, Section 25, Television Personality, Scars. I honestly never heard of them, but also you had pretty huge bands like Black Flag, TSOL, Agent Orange, Minutemen, Polystyrene, New Order, and Depeche Mode. This is a huge year for debuts. I think it's a bigger year for debuts than it is for what was going on in pop. So indie versus pop, you tell me which is winning. The Go-Go's debut album, We Got the Beat, Our Lips Are Sealed. Duran Duran's debut album, already did an episode on them. Oingo Boingo's debut album, Danny Elfman from Oingo Boingo. Thompson Twins debut album, Bow Wow Wow, Tom Tom Club, Men at Work, Who Can It Be Now and Down Under were on their debut album. And they'd even have bigger hits after that. The DeBarges. They would go on to several R&B hits in the 1980s. Kirsty MacColl, late great. Phil Collins' debut solo album, which had In the Air Tonight and I Missed Again, among others. Eurythmics debuted. Spandau Ballet, Level 42, Modern English, and Heaven 17. So that new romantic sound coming out of the Britain, new wave. Kim Wilde's debut album, which had Kids in America. Soft Cell, which had Tainted Love. Did I put Kirsty MacColl twice? I did. Oh, I see what I did. I copied and pasted some stuff. You want to see? No, you don't. Quarter Flash, The Replacements, debut albums. Lots of metal debuts, too, including Dokken, Kicks Are For Kids, Motley Crue. Also, The Church, Stars on 45. Why do I mention that as a debut album? Those were session artists doing sound-alike hit songs so that they didn't have to pay royalties. Think Kids Bop, but for grown-ups. Luther Vandross' debut album, Cool and the Gang. Wait a minute, where am I? Cool and the Gang did not have a debut album, but it was a notable. Get down on it. Peter Cetera's debut album, solo album, didn't do well. He would do much better later on. Pieces of a Dream in Yellow Jackets, showing that jazz, in particular fusion, was doing kind of well. Jazz was kind of super avant in 70s and for most of the decade. of the, sorry, the decade of the 70s, anything that hit in the 70s was like funk fusion or veering smooth. And that's kind of what was starting to happen in the 80s as well. George Strait's debut album, Stray Cats, Sheena Easton, The Time, and Tony Basil of Oh Mickey fame. Debut albums. Other notable albums in 1981, Black Sabbath with Dio for the first time, Ronnie James Dio, The Cure's Faith, huge Hall & Oates album, Private Eyes, I Can't Go For That. They would continue that early 80s dominance. Def Leppard had a great album. They were starting to climb, didn't hit the heights they would yet. Gang of Four, mixing post-punk and funk. Human League, that album had Don't You Want Me. Jay Giles, huge album in 81 with Centerfold and Freeze Frame, I think their biggest album. Kraftwerk, though they were seminal in the 70s, this album, their 81 album, was huge for sampling for hip-hop. Police, Ghost in the Machine, Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic, Invisible Sun, Spirits in the Material World were on there. Prince's Controversy, just unstoppable as he climbed. Psychedelic Furs, that album had Pretty in Pink, which several years later would become a hit. Rick James' album in 81 had Give It to Me Baby and Super Freak. Rush's Moving Pictures, which had Tom Sawyer. Squeeze, Tempted, Tina Marie, Tom Petty. These are all notable albums. U2's October. Considered a classic. Van Halen album, still climbing, still going their way up. The Cars, Shake It Up, great album from them. More great stuff from Joan Jett, The Pretenders, Olivia Newton-John, Physical was on that album. Ozzy's Diary of a Madman had Flying High Again, so two great albums back to back from Ozzy. Genesis, Abacab, again, man, they haven't even come close to the heights they would reach, but they were doing great. The Who's Face Dances, which had You Better You Bet. The Kinks, Give the People What They Want, which was kind of their comeback album, which had Destroyer and some other things like that. What's the one that had Better Things on it, too? Check out my Kinks episode, by the way, if you haven't. It's everywhere you get your fine effing podcasts. So let's get to 1982. More of the same. Kind of boring on the surface, the way 81 sort of was, but it was holding some stuff that would absolutely blow up the 1980s and establish who would reign. So this was not a year where the 80s were the most 80s, but it was kind of gestating in a way that was super important. Some top albums, holdovers, AC/DC and Foreigner, Jay Giles, The Go-Go's. So you're starting to see a change where indie stuff was rising up to number one more often. And that's one of the more interesting things about the 80s. Vangelis' Chariots of Fire was number one. Asia's debut supergroup album with Heat of the Moment and Only Time Will Tell. That was the top album of the year. So it's interesting. You had albums like Pink Floyd's The Wall and Styx's Paradise Theater and this one, Asia. So you really, what's interesting, the number one album so far, very kind of, to me, backward looking. I mean, they have an 80s sound, but they're really looking back to the way music was developed in the mid to late 70s. You also have McCartney's Tug of War, which had Ebony and Ivory and Take It Away. Fleetwood Mac's Mirage, which had the song Hold Me, one of my favorites from theirs. John Cougar, which had Hurt So Good, and Jack and Diane, and Men at Work had a number one album as well. So again, you know, somewhat indie. Debut albums that year, 82. Husker Du, Don't Get Me Started, Mission of Burma, Bad Brains, Misfits, Red Cross, so many great post-punk and punk. Shonen Knife, a Japanese female band, which I got into many years after this. They started in 82. I did not know that. MDC, Millions of Dead Cops. So, you know, people who talk about hip-hop and NWA and all that stuff, the whole cop thing, if you've ever listened to reggae, certain kinds of country, certain kinds of punk, It's not just hip hop, you know, spewing things about how the cop, we have issues with the cops in this country. It's also punk and things like that. Theater of Hate, Meat Puppets, Descendants, Billy Idol, Flock of Seagulls, Adam Ant, that album had Goody Two Shoes, Bad Religion, which they would have more hits in the 90s, I believe. Cocteau Twins, Waitresses, ABC, Thomas Dolby, so a lot of the Brit stuff going on. That had She Blinded Me with Science. Men Without Hats, which had Safety Dance. The Fix, which eventually they released One Thing Leads to Another. Not on this album. Culture Club, I'll Tumble For You, Do You Really Want to Hurt Me, Time Clock of My Heart. I mean, what a great album. And they do another great album after this. Yaz or Yazoo, which had Don't Go and Situation and Only You. Wang Chung, Talk Talk, Haircut 100, Skritti Politti. So many great British bands putting out debut albums in 82. Laurie Anderson, Laura Branigan had Gloria on it. Night Ranger, Eddie Murphy's first stand-up album, The Gypsy Kings, Virgin Prunes, Lee Greenwood, Michael McDonald. It had, I keep forgetting, Janet Jackson's debut album was actually 82. After LaToya, interestingly enough, and certainly nowhere near the heights she would reach. Jeffrey Osborne and Lionel Richie debut albums. Junior, the song Mama Used to Say, British artist, love that. Ray Parker Jr. had the song The Other Woman. He's the guy who would write Ghostbusters and perform it. Man Parrish, seminal for electro hip hop. He was super influential, also gay, and will go on to do the song Boogie Down Bronx, one of my favorites. Grandmaster Flash album had The Message. Vanity Six had Nasty Girl. Yellow Man, it was dance hall, very important. Musical Youth, that album had Past the Duchy. Kenny G's first album in 1982, as well as Wynton Marsalis. Marshall Crenshaw, the famous of Someday, Someway, blah, 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 sound alike a Billy Buddy Holly. Yes, I don't know. Pac-Man Fever's album, Buckner and Garcia. Twisted Sister's first album, A Dream Syndicate. Other notable albums of the year. Climax, Women, Electro, Pop, Funk. Philip Glass's Glassworks. Psychedelic Furs, which I love my way. Susie and the Banshees. George Clinton. Pointer Sisters. I'm so excited. Midnight Oil. Ornette Coleman, Joe Jackson had Steppin' Out, The Fall, and X. The Gap Band had Early in the Morning, You Dropped a Bomb on Me. Judas Priest, still killing it. Another great Go-Go's album with Vacation. Sparks, Marvin Gaye, Sexual Healing. It was his last album. Elvis Costello, Springsteen's Nebraska, The Cure's Pornography, Duran Duran's Rio, Ecstasy, Census Working Overtime, Peter Gabriel, Shock the Monkey, Roxy Music, Avalon, More Than This, Iron Maiden, The Number of the Beast, Clash, Combat Rock, Should I Stay or Should I Go, Chicago 16's Huge Comeback, Hello, I Must Be Going, another amazing Phil Collins album, Billy Joel's Nylon Curtain, Don't Get Me Started, and Prince's 1999 and Thriller, and we'll talk more about those after the break. Hey, so I was going to do the usual and just list all of the links that I'd love for you to check out, but I realized that everything you need to know and everywhere you need to go is at nickdimatteo.com. That really is the hub. I list all the links in every episode just in case, but nickdimatteo.com is where I put everything that I do. If you want to know more about this podcast, whether it's the audio version or the YouTube version at youtube.com/@musicisnotagenre or wherever else the podcast shows up, or if you want to support the podcast at patreon.com/musicisnotagenre, just go to nickdimatteo.com. It's all there. If you want to check out my full discography of original music and covers for my band Rec, REC, and beyond, it's at nickdimatteo.com, including all the streaming and social links for wherever you listen to music and wherever you check out your soch. My acting clips are there. My voiceover clips are there. Graphic design, my blog, and most especially, it's the best place to contact me. If you go to nickdimatteo.com/contact or just hit the contact is on every single page, you can send me a note, say hello, ask me any questions you'd like. You get a newsletter a few times a month, and if you have a project of your own and need work done for it, whether it's audio editing or music or voiceover or graphic design, or if you have an event and you need live music, go to nickdimatteo.com, contact me, say hello, let me know what you need. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show. Hey, hey. Oh, wait a minute. Let's do that again. Crossfade. Yeah, we're back. So I won't do crossfade every time. That's fine. So one thing, when we get to, as we get to the second half of this first half of, I don't know, second half of 4.1, you notice that I was like reading off albums before the break very quickly. We do this system where we are recording podcasts a half hour at a time because that's the capacity of this wonderful recording device that my wife, Catherine, runs, amazing photographer and videographer. And so I wanted to finish 1982 before the break, and so I was like going crazy, crazy, crazy. There's not really much to review there other than to say notable albums and debut albums were more interesting in 82 than the top albums in to me, right? That, of course, would change. Now, that's what's interesting, right? Because Thriller was released in 82, but it didn't make the impact it would until the following couple of years, frankly. It had such staying power. But that brings us to 1983. And 1983, to me, is the first big pivot point of the 1980s. You had 80, 81, 82, things kind of building up. You had some holdovers, but you had, again, some pretty clear definition of what the 80s would be already. And a lot of stuff happening underground. But the way things would gel to really propel the 80s into the 80s, to me, this year 83 was when it happened. Non-white artists were starting to dominate the charts more, which is a welcome sight. Indie continued to rise up slowly, as did metal, which itself was indie in some ways. The era of big 80s, the way we think of the 80s, it wasn't quite as big as we remember it. I think a lot of people think when they think that, they're really thinking of the later 80s or mid to late 80s. But it was starting by 83. Really, the 80s as a distinct decade was arriving. And that was told in part by how few albums topped the charts. And again, please keep in mind when I say that number, or well, whatever number it is, how there were so few albums that topped the charts. Not quite there yet. So, top album of the year, Thriller. I mean, there's nothing else to say there, right? Men at Work, the holdover album. Flashdance, the soundtrack, top album. The Police's Synchronicity. Was that their first number one? I think it might have been. Quiet Riot's Metal Health. So that's pretty huge that a band like that would have a number one album. Lionel Richie's Can't Slow Down. So it's his second album, I believe. Well, I don't remember. Solo album. Had All Night Long, Running with the Night, Hello, Stuck on You. I mean, it's clear why he was such a dominant force in the 80s. But that's it. That was it for number one albums. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's all. Not the fewest ever, but close. Debut albums in 1983, Naked Eyes, who did Always Something There to Remind Me, Kajagoogoo, produced by the guy who produced Duran Duran, had the song Too Shy. The, I always liked the name of that band because I once was asked to make up the name of a band in algebra class in eighth grade, and I came up with The Thes as a joke, not knowing there was a band that was already kind of named that. Nana, 99, Luftballoons, was 83. Big Country, In a Big Country Dream, Stay With You. Bananarama's debut album, 1983. Malcolm McLaren, who produced Sex Pistols. That album had Buffalo Gals and Double Dutch, which would be pretty huge. Peter Schilling, the song Major Tom. Ground Control to Major Tom. Earth Below, a sinking, falling, etc. Wham's debut album, Madonna's debut album. For those of you who can see the diorama, by the way, this is a good time in the middle of 83 to take a small break and actually stand up and show you. I'm going to crouch here because I can't remember what my height is. The albums I have in the back here are kind of eclectic. So you have Madonna and The Cure and U2 and Violent Femmes and Dead Milkmen and Run DMC, Prince and Thriller. So Purple Rain and Thriller. You can't see them all, but if you ever want to see, that's just a fraction of the 80s albums that I have. Message me or go to patreon.com/musicisnotagenre. We can have a talk about all the albums I have and what albums you might have. Along with Madonna's debut album, Cyndi Lauper's debut album, pretty amazing for 1 year. Katrina and the Waves, that had, of course, Walking on Sunshine. Tears for Fears' debut album, Corey Hart, Sunglasses at Night, great Canadian artist. Matthew Wilder, that album had Break of My Stride. That song is super popular lately. I've seen it a lot on social for some reason. R.E.M.'s Murmur, debut album, pretty amazing. I think they had an EP before them, but whatever. 10,000 Maniacs debut album. Violent Femmes debut album, one of my favorite bands. Hooters from Philly debut album. Pulp started in 1978 as a band, who knew, and their first album was 1983. Billy Bragg, Sonic Youth, Suicidal Tendencies, Ministry, Gene Loves Jezebel, Alien Sex Fiend, so some goth representations there. Lita Ford, Social Distortion, Europe, Minor Threat, Exciter, Speed Metal, one of the first. Dio's first solo album, Metallica's first album, Merciful Fate, Pantera, Slayer, a ton of frickin' metal coming up, especially this year. Weird Al's first album ever. Jennifer Holliday, Anita Baker, James Ingram, Johnny Gill, pre-New Edition, all solo debut albums, but also New Edition's debut album, which to me, 1983 was the start of the modern boy band era. Because of New Edition, this album had Candy Girl, Is This the End? They go on to greater heights. Houdini, amazing hip-hop band. They had some hits. Mary Jane Girls, who eventually did In My House, not on this album. This was their debut. Some great jazz, John Pizzarelli and Bill Frisell. John Pizzarelli is the son of Bucky Pizzarelli. Stevie Ray Vaughan's first album, Michael W. Smith, The Waterboys, Paul Young, who did a cover of Joy Division's Love Will Tear Us Apart on this album. He eventually would do the song Every Time You Go Away. Marillion, which showed the return, not that it ever went away, but in terms of another wave, let's say maybe second wave, let's call it. There was proto, there was 70s, and this is kind of the second wave of prog. Really starting in a big way with Marillion. They go on to huge success as a prog band. Tracy Ullman's first comedy album was in 1983. Some other notable albums of this year. The Kinks' biggest comeback happened this year with an album that included Come Dancing and State of Confusion. Yes's album, huge freaking comeback, 90125, Owner of a Lonely Heart and all that stuff. Don't even get me started. Kiss's Lick It Up was somewhat of a comeback, and it was the first time they did an album and performed without makeup. Spandau Ballet had a notable album with the song I Know This Much Is True. Ba, 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 ba. Bryan Adams, Cuts Like a Knife was on this album. Elton's comeback album, guess that's why they call it the Blues, I'm Still Standing. Stray Cats, this album had Sexy and 17. Men at Work, another album which had Dr. Heckle and Mr. Jive, Overkill and It's a Mistake. Some great songs. I mean, I really enjoyed Men at Work. They're just other than the fact that I can't sing as high as Colin Hay, love them. Bob Seger had a great album this year. Philip Glass's Koyaanisqatsi. Why do I say that? First of all, minimalism. And Philip Glass was huge in the 80s. And anybody who went to college in the 80s and even 90s and probably even up till now, if you're in music and you're talking about the Philip Glass comes up a lot. The way certain people come up in college. And it was a film soundtrack. A very good replacements album in this year. Thin Lizzy's final album in 83. OMD's Dazzle Ships. Weird album. If you only know the song If You Leave from OMD, listen to Dazzle Ships and you will be dazzled. Another great Eurythmics album. Donna Summer had hard. She works hard for the money on this album. A breakthrough album from The Cure. I'm sorry, that doesn't say Cure. That says Crew, as in Motley Crue. Motley Crue's breakthrough album this year. Talking Heads album, which had Burning Down the House. ZZ Top. This album had Gimme All Your Lovin', Sharp Dressed Man. Culture Club, Karma Chameleon, Church of the Poison Mind. Just another great album from them. Huey Lewis had another great album. Heart of Rock and Roll and Want a New Drug was on there. Great Tom Waits album. Bowie's Let's Dance. I mean, he didn't need a comeback, but if there was one, this was it. Def Leppard, huge freaking album with Photograph and Rock of Ages. Another New Order album. They would go on to greater heights. Pointer Sisters, huge freaking album, which had Jump, I'm So Excited, Neutron Dance, and Automatic. Herbie Hancock, which had the song Rocket. U2's War, which had Sunday Bloody Sunday, New Year's Day, and all that stuff. Billy Joel's Innocent Man. Super, I mean, what else to say? I mean, that was probably his most dominant album and period and all that stuff and something he'd been building to for a long time and that he richly deserved. And I'm glad he's back making new music. Hopefully he'll do more than one song.
Hey, folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month. So just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
Which brings me to 1984, that year of novel fame. And to me, even though the 83 was that huge pivot point year, 1984 was the year when the 80s truly arrived. It was, I think it might be, I don't know, is it the most 80s year of the 80s? I'm not sure. But it's when they finally were like, we leave everything else behind, this is it. And this is also the year in history, before and since, with the fewest number one albums in a year. There were only 5 number one albums for this year. I mean, if you remember that period in the 70s where you had like 20 number one albums, and there were certain even years in the 80s where it was similar. The 60s were a little bit more consistent with the maybe 10-ish, something like that. You know, 5 is so small. So it says how dominant these albums were. They're some of the biggest albums in history, in the history of music. And it's a year when non-white artists really, really took over. And also when hip-hop arrived as a huge seller. So even though 83 was this pivot point, I think 84 was an even more seminal year, not just for the 80s, but for music in general. So some top albums. Once again, you know, the dominant album of the year, the top album of the year was Thriller, which of course, and that's back there if you see the diorama. Purple Rain was a very close second. As far as album, the top album, Footloose, the soundtrack was a number one album. Huey Lewis's Sports, which I had those songs I mentioned in the notable because I think it was released the year before. Born in the USA from Springsteen. So you have in 1 year, and not that they were all released in the same year, but in 1 year on as number ones, you had Thriller, Purple Rain, and Born in the USA. It's just an iconic year. And along with those, you had Footloose and Huey Lewis, which makes this what the 80s were, really, to me. Some debut albums in 84, The Art of Noise. I almost put that in the diorama, couldn't fit it. Dead or Alive, You Spin Me Round, that band. Bronski Beat, Alphaville. So a lot of British. Jack Wagner, which with the song All I Need. The Bangles' debut album, Apollonia 6. It had the song Sex Shooter. Sheila E.'s debut album. So Prince was doing a whole lot, as he always did, you know, before and after, with other artists, especially female artists. So, he had Vanity 6, I think, the year before. Now Apollonia 6 here. Then Sheila E. Sade with Smooth Operator, debut album. The Fat Boys' debut album. I almost put that on the diorama. Nucleus, which had Jam On It. That's spelled N-E-W-C-L-E-U-S. By the way, if you don't know Jam On It, you don't know hip-hop. You don't know old school, old school. Treacherous 3, excellent hip-hop band. Great debut album. Run DMC, It's Behind Me, their debut album. You should watch the documentary that we watched. It was a 3-year part, I think, whatever. Shannon's debut album. It had the song Let the Music Play. Rockwell, Somebody's Watching Me. He also did a cover of Taxman on there, which was okay. Red Hot Chili Peppers' debut album in 1984. Great White, Rat, with 2 T's, Round and Round was their song. Striper, just Christian metal. I think one of their albums, and I don't know if it was this one, is called To Hell with the Devil, but debut album in 84, Wasp in 84, Bon Jovi in 84, so a lot of metal. Runaway was on there. I always loved that song. It's very, to me, uncharacteristic of what Bon Jovi would do later, and I like it for that reason. Soul Asylum's debut album, Warlock, Anthrax, The Alarm, The Cult, Corrosion of Conformity, Metal Church, Butthole Surfers, Agnostic Front, all debut albums. The Smiths' first album was in 84. So was Nick Cave's. Howard Jones, great singer-songwriter on that album, was New Song and What Is Love. Not the dance What Is Love. This is What Is Love Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Julian Lennon's album debut, Too Late for Goodbyes and Valotte, two huge hits for Julian Lennon. Mr. Mister's debut album, Kathy Mattea and K.D. Lang with a band. Debut album. The Pogues' debut album. Steve Vai's debut album. And Yngwie Malmsteen's debut album. I just took a small nap there after mentioning Steve Vai and Yngwie Malmsteen. Sorry about that. That is commentary. Other notable albums from 1984, Wham's second album, Wake Me Up Before You Go Go, Careless Whisper, Everything She Wants and Freedom were on that album. This was their breakout album. Madonna's Like a Virgin, It's Behind Me, Over My Right Shoulder, So That's Your Left, Right There, Seminal, notable. Van Halen's 1984, I wish I could say that was their hugest album ever. They go on to greater heights with Doofus Head, but this was my favorite of theirs. Unforgettable Fire, U2. This is why one of my favorite years for music. I mean, that's still probably my favorite U2 album. The Cure's The Top, which had Caterpillar. They'd go on to make, to me, even better albums, but this was sort of them coming out of the goth phase. Femmes, Hallowed Ground, their second album. Incredible. If all you know is na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na and the stuff from that album, listen to Hallowed Ground. Listen to the one behind me, The Blind Leading the Naked. You'll be blown away by them. They're an amazing band. The Replacements, Let It Be. I have so much to say about The Replacements. This isn't the place to do it, but check me and DM me if you want to talk about them. Ride the Lightning, which was, oh, shit, was that Metallica? Yeah. Private Dancer, Tina Turner, amazing, 1984. Husker Du Zen Arcade, classic. REM's Reckoning, which had Don't Go Back to Rockville. They, of course, would go on to bigger and better. More solid stuff from Echo and the Bunnymen, The Pretenders, Bryan Adams, Iron Maiden, Laura Branigan, Pat Benatar, Elton John. The Cars, super big comeback, although Shake It Up was a great album. You Might Think, Magic, and Drive were on this album. Chicago 17, as far as I'm concerned, that wave of Chicago, 16, 17, 18, 19, up to maybe 21, 17 was the best of those albums. And it was also the last one with Peter Cetera. Billy Ocean, Suddenly. What a great song. I used to play that in the piano and sing it. Frankie Goes to Hollywood's debut album. Steve Perry's debut solo, which had Oh Sherry and Foolish Heart. The Scorpions, Rock You Like a Hurricane. Chaka Khan's debut solo album, I Feel For You, was on there. I'm sorry. These aren't debut albums. I should have had more coffee. These are notable albums. Please don't write in. Because people still write in, you know, with stamps. These are not debut albums. These are all notable albums. Hall & Oates had the song Out of Touch on it. I think it was kind of their last big album, was in the 84. The soundtrack to Beverly Hills Cop was notable. Cool and the Gang, Misled and Fresh and Cherish. What a big album for them. It was a good album, too. Twisted Sister, it had We're Not Gonna Take It and I Wanna Rock. And other metal bands in 84 were super going strong. Still, New Edition's breakthrough album was in 84, which had Cool It Now, Mr. Telephone Man, Lost in Love, Houdini. Houdini. I'm just skipping through. Houdini's breakthrough album, which had Friends and Freaks Come Out at Night. Great album. Amazing. Great year for Houdini. Curtis Blow, this album had Basketball on it. Depeche Mode, which had People Are People, Master and Servant, Blasphemous Rumors, and Somebody. What? That's one of my favorite albums from them. Leonard Cohen, this album in 84 has the song pretty much most people, the only one they know from Leonard Cohen, which is Hallelujah. Check it, 84. Great year of music. Stevie Wonder's soundtrack to The Woman in Red was also in 84, which brings me to the final year that I'm going to do before we go on to part two. So for those of you who are counting, you're going to have to wait for subsequent years later on and all of my conclusions. And that is 1985. And it's fitting that this year is probably the most 80s of the 80s. So even though the 80s had arrived in 84, 85 is middle of the year, of course. It is the most 80s. Just huge albums from huge stars. Things were getting more fractured, which is great. And it's probably because the industry was like, oh, we see what the 80s are about now. Let's cash in. And they started throwing everything at the wall and seeing what would stick. That would happen again in the 90s. There's still room for the odd hit, but this is when pop was really dominating over indie. Though it's not surprising, that's also one of the best years for indie. Maybe not in sales, but in terms of releases, that's for sure. The top albums in 1985, Purple Rain. Again, holdover. Born in the USA was the absolute top album of the year. So another holdover, but yeah, the domination. Madonna's Like a Virgin. Wham's Make It Big, which was released at the end of the previous year. John Fogerty's album Centerfield, What's a big album that you're number one? Phil Collins, No Jacket Required. It continued his dominance. It had Susudio, One More Night, Don't Lose My Number, Take Me Home. We Are the World was a full album and not just a single, and that was a number one album of the year. Cool documentary we saw recently about that song. Prince's Around the World in the Day, one of my absolute favorites. I love that whole period. Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack was a number one. Miami Vice. This is really when TV started to be a real force in music, like a real force, was Miami Vice, and it's 1985. Tears for Fears song from the Songs from the Big Chair, which had Shout, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, Head Over Heels. Bryan Adams' Reckless was a number one album, Run to You, Summer of 69, etc. Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms, which had Money for Nothing, Walk of Life. I mean, Kim, this is why I'm saying 85 was so 85. Heart had a huge freaking album with songs like What About Love, Never, and These Dreams. Gigantic for them. 1985, some debut albums. And again, those were all number one albums. Pretty eclectic, right? Some debut albums. Dead Milkmen, which I have back there, with Bigler's in My Backyard, with the song Bitchin' Camaro. Dramarama debut album. Dinosaur Jr. Fine Young Cannibals. Delamitri. A-ha had a debut album with the song Take On Me. Erasure's debut album, Vince Clark. Faith No More debut. Jesus and Mary Chain, Sisters of Mercy. My Bloody Valentine, so shoegaze. Stormtroopers of Death, so, you know, punk, you know, second wave punk maybe. White Zombie, Megadeth. So metal was happening in 85. A lot of great debut albums. Alison Krauss had a debut album in 85. She's been around a while. Sting's solo debut, Dream of the Blue Turtles, had If You Love Somebody, Set Them Free. Love is a Seventh Wave. Fortress Around Your Heart. If you know, if you're a fan at all of The Police and Sting, you need to go listen to Fortress Around Your Heart right now. I don't honestly care if you come back. That song might take you somewhere you want to go. Moon Over Bourbon Street, also great on that album. The Highwaymen, which featured Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, Kris Kristofferson, debut. The Jets, a Tongan American band. They had a huge hit with Crush on You and several other huge hits, not just a one-hit wonder. By the way, I'll be doing an episode this season on two-hit wonders, and I'll explain more when that comes. Can you count Starship as a debut album? They had been around as Jefferson Airplane, Jefferson Starship, so I don't know if you can, but that album had We Built This City and Sarah. Mike and the Mechanics, Mike from Rutherford, right, from Genesis, and All I Need is a Miracle is on that. The beginning of David Hasselhoff's domination of Germany and Austria was in this year, his debut album, 1980. Five. Simply Red, Holding Back the Years was on there. The Outfield, I Don't Want to Lose Your Love Tonight is on there. Ziggy Marley's debut album, Full Force, Alice, I Want You Just For Me. Full Force would go on to produce Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam with Full Force. Debut album this year, All Cried Out. Can You Feel the Beat Within My Heart? I Wonder If I Take You Home. And then they would go on to have another hit a couple year or two later, Heart and Soul. Ready for the World's debut album with O'Sheila, Freddie Jackson, You Are My Lady, and Rock Me Tonight. LL Cool J's debut album with Radio, You'll Rock. Rock the Bells and I Can Give You More. Come on. Schoolie D's debut album, PSK, Making That Green. People always say, what the hell does that mean? P for the people who can't understand how one homeboy became a man. S for the way you scream and shout. Etc. UTFO's debut album, which had Roxanne, Roxanne, Big Audio Dynamite, Mick Jones from The Clash's band, debut album, Vince Gill, debut album, Suzanne Vega, Camper Van Beethoven, Till Tuesday, which had Amy Mann, that song, Hush Hush, Keep It Down Now, Voices Carry, Whitney Houston's debut album, You Give Good Love, All at Once, Saving All My Love, How Will I Know, Greatest Love of All. Keep that album in mind when we get to next week. Other notable albums, Run DMC's King of Rock, John Cougar Mellencamp's, had Small Town, Lonely All Night, R.O.C.K. in the USA, Kate Bush, notable, Replacements, again, I'm not a fan, but I understand why they're seminal. Husker Du had a great album this year. So did New Order. Smith's Meat is Murder. Cure's Head on the Door, probably still my favorite album of theirs, came out in 85. R.E.M. Fables of the Reconstruction. The Fall. Talking Heads' Little Creatures, which had And She Was. We're on the Road to Nowhere. Miami Sound Machine, which had Bad Boy, Words Get in the Way, and Conga. Aretha, Who's Zoomin' Who, great album for her. Motley Crue, which had Smokin' in the Boys' Room, Home Sweet Home, who, keep in mind Motley Crue, because we're getting into the true age of hair metal next week. The Hooters, better album, All You Zombies and We Danced, huge hits for that Philly band. Corey Hart had a hit with Never Surrender. NXS is Listen Like Thieves, What You Need This Time. They'd even go on to bigger hits after that. Sade had Sweetest Taboo, Never As Good As The First Time, just dominant. Big one for Luther Vandross this year. Stevie's In Square Circle was maybe one of his, maybe his last classic album, I think. Atlantic Star, which had the hit Secret Lovers. Commodores without Richie, Lionel Richie, had that big hit Night Shift, which I think is the best song about dead musicians. Night Shift. It was about Jackie Wilson and Marvin Gaye, who both died in 84. I think it's better than American Pie. Metal bands were doing well that year also. So conclusions in the few minutes we have left. I realized when I did a quick note, the episode in the 70s, that I'm basically, these album episodes are me doing a survey from each decade and talking about how music changed and developed, but not doing a lot of talking about the album as art since the 60s, really, episode. So I'm going to catch up on that, which is this. There's always been a divide between crafting albums meant to be listened to beginning to end, you know, of a piece, you know, to careful sequencing, whether they're concept or not, and compiling albums that work as well on shuffle, just a collection of songs. And we've talked about that before. That duality was bubbling up in the 60s, ballooned in both directions in the 70s with prog and concept on one side and other genres on the other side. By the late 70s and 80s, those sides were merging. So you had shades of pop albums with a concept or a certain sequence that mattered, and you know, prog albums that had hits on them and that were, had singles on them, like 90125 from Yes. You know, it's possible to carefully sequence albums without them being concept albums, and it would matter. And I think this is what the 80s helped to define as far as an album as a construction. When you think of every Prince album and every U2 album crafted with sequence in mind, even though they weren't all concept albums. And I think the 80s kind of really was the where that all kind of gelled for the first time. Album length was still dictated by vinyl, 40 to 45 minutes. Cassettes and CDs did not change the form of the album. Cassettes never really did, but CDs didn't change the form of the album until the 90s, frankly. And I'll talk about that in bonus episodes, as far as length in particular, but and other things too. Some conclusions before we get to the end of this. Again, had was such a sudden change at the beginning of the decade, the 70s to the 80s. It was like a slap in the face, and whether you liked it or not, a welcome change to me and to many others. We are now deep into the meat of the 80s, having gone through 1985, and it's clear that the earlier aesthetics, 78 to 82, even 83 a little bit, were giving way to the big 80s sound with more reverb and stuff like that. And honestly, I'm going to save the rest of my summary for part 4.2 next week. The featured song for this week is a song by a band called Business of Ferrets, which I was a part of with Pete Bradus. Wrote a song called Computers and Cognac. It's on my album, It Wasn't Me. So it's streaming everywhere. Links are there and you'll hear it in just a minute or two. It's clear this song was super, super heavily influenced by the early 1980s. You'll hear electronic post-punk sound, a vaguely German accent by me. It's very indie. I almost used this one for the video game episode, by the way, and you'll hear why. So questions, what are your favorite albums from the first half of the 80s? Do you think these albums were the best of the 80s and that they hold up to other greats from other decades? How do you feel about the 80s production values thus far up to 1985 in comparison to what we came before and after? When you think of the 80s, do you identify more with the first half or the second half? And finally, before we hear the song, Computers and Cognac, bonus episode of patreon.com/musicisnotagenre, the full history of cassettes, with me holding my cassettes in my lap, probably. Thank you for listening. As always, my objectives here are music, conversation, and connection. Part two of the 1980s comes next week.
In Minsk. They do it in Berlin. playing Xbox. Humanity is a facade. In this digital age, with a useless Facebook page. The bits and the bytes.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.